Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 343, titled Mein Jihad, Part 2, Old Complicities Going Back to the Late 1930s. This is being recorded on January 13th of the year 2002, and we're continuing the discussion of the events in and around September 11th. I would also point out that this discussion represents a development of the analysis of the alleged role of an organization called NADA Management, formerly Al-Taqwa, and some of its fascist and fascist fellow traveling associates in the events of September 11th, a role that they firmly deny, but that is alleged by, among other institutions, the U.S. government and intelligence community. Now, we've been examining a book called Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam. This was authored by Richard Labeviere, translated by Martin Demer, published first in French in 1999 and then in English, copyright 2000 in softcover by Algora Publishing. And we're going to resume with our discussion of the Muslim Brotherhood, or the Fraternity, as it's called by Richard Labeviere. This organization is allegedly not only involved with elements of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, but has strong connections to Saudi Arabia, to Saudi Wahhabism, and also through the petroleum industry to elements of U.S. intelligence. And I believe that this is one of the central elements in the fascist fifth column that doubled on the United States and U.S. intelligence and the military in the September 11th attacks. Turning now to Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeviere, of the role of the fraternity or the Muslim Brotherhood to which Yusuf Nada belonged in attempting to oust the British from the Middle East during World War II. And I think from a conceptual standpoint, we could think of Al-Qaeda and its Islamo-fascist allies as representing, in effect, a post-war underground Reich manifestation of the Afrika Korps. Turning to Dollars for Terror, of the activities of the Muslim Brotherhood's military branch in World War II, in 1942, the fraternity clandestinely established its military branch. This came to light in a spectacular way with the assassination, while the parliament was in full session on February 24, 1945, of Prime Minister Ahmad Maher. He had just declared war on the Axis powers. The brothers would also finance the assassination of Minister Amin Osman Pasha on January 5, 1946, for the crime of Anglophilia, and the same year, that of the chief of the police force, Selim Zaki Pasha. In 1947, the Muslim Brothers fought in the first rows in the war in Palestine. 1 year later, in Egypt once again, the fraternity's armed branch did not put down its weapons, but engaged in a direct confrontation with the ruling power, following the dismantling of one of its training camps at Mokattam in the Cairo suburbs. Another political assassination followed in March 1948, this time killing Judge Ahmad Kazindar, who had just condemned one of the brothers for his participation in an armed attack. The fraternity, suspected of preparing a coup d'etat, was dissolved at the king's orders on December 6, 1948. Bear in mind that Yusuf Nada, a member of this organization in World War II, and allegedly, according to Egyptian intelligence, working for the Third Reich in this area. What we're going to look at now is the role of the economic component of the Muslim Brotherhood. This goes back to its formation, and what we're going to look at is a structure which I believe is not only parallel to that of the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization about which I've spoken in the past, but one which I believe is inextricably linked with the Bormann organization, both in its Middle Eastern slash Saudi slash petro-fascist, to coin a term, connections, but also through to the Bush family and this fifth column that I believe it was the American component of the attack on September 11th. In For the Record program 342, we took a look at an Egyptian called Ismail, who was one of the informants of Richard Labeviere for this book. And so what we're going to look at is Ismail's connections, allegations concerning the economic power of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then we're going to jump back in time and then move forward. Continuing our exploration of the maze, my anonymous interlocutor, the former manager of a large Saudi bank, affirmed that alongside Youssef Nada, there is another Egyptian IS called Ismail, who oversees matters connected with several holding companies in which the bank is a shareholder. Director of the company Spacetronic Salah International, an electronic products company that trades mainly with Sudan, this former member of the armed branch of the brothers followed the same route as Youssef Nada, his alter ego. And what we're going to look at next is the economic power, again, of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we're going to take a look at the Muslim Brotherhood's focus on and settling in Afghanistan as the site for its intended reconstitution of the caliphate, or an Islamo-fascist, Islamic fundamentalist empire. Turning now to, once again, to Dollars for Terror. After being imprisoned three times in 1948, in 1954, and 1965, Mustafa Mashour was promoted. By the way, he is the, quote, supreme guide, unquote, sort of the Islamo-Führer of the Muslim Brotherhood. When the brothers were released from prison at the beginning of Anwar al-Sadat's presidency, the military branch created in the 1940s reconstituted itself under the name of the Special Order, unquote. Consequently, this armed group has run the Egyptian and international branches of the organization. Mashour was one of the heads of the Special Order, and so it is absolutely natural that he is the new supreme guide today. Strangely, he left Egypt just a few days before the assassination of Sadat, unquote. By the way, turncoat or double agent for Al-Qaeda inside of U.S. intelligence that we looked at in For the Record 338, Ali Mohammed, and also Mr. al-Zawahiri, Osama bin Laden's right-hand man, are connected to Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which appears to have been one of the primary elements involved in the assassination of Anwar Sadat. Speaking of the coalescing of the fraternity or Muslim Brotherhood in Afghanistan, Mashour returned to Egypt only in 1986, and from that time on, he devoted himself entirely to making the International Organization of the Brothers in the service of the Arab Volunteers for Afghanistan. Quote, at the time, he saw that holy war as heralding the creation of a future Islamic state in Afghanistan, adds his former counterpart. Again quoting, at the time, the fraternity saw that country as the site for the refounding of the caliphate, the only political structure likely to unite all the Muslims one day. Today, Mashour is 77 years old. By the way, that would have been at the time of the writing of this book in 1999. Note that the Taliban and Mullah Omar, married to one of Osama bin Laden's daughters, saw themselves in exactly that same context. Now, of the economic power of the Muslim Brotherhood, we read, obviously, one runs into a wall of silence and fear as soon as one evinces too much interest in the fraternity's economic and financial activities. However, since the late 1920s, it has run a parallel economy. In Cairo, its five supermarkets bear the sign Al-Tawid Unity are well known, as are certain butcher shops and car showrooms. But these establishments represent only the visible layer of an economy that is far more ramified. Nothing official, of course, just some modest shops, a constellation of small businesses, butchers, spinning mills, drapers, fabric dyeing, and small currency exchange offices, so many tradesmen who will never acknowledge their links with the fraternity, but whose profits flow into the Islamic banks and capital investment companies that, for their part, operated in broad daylight in the 1980s. And I would add that consider the Borman Organization and the Brotherhood as the Islamic manifestation of the Borman Organization, initially parallel, now, I believe, hooked up to it. Thanks to the liberalization of the banking sector, these companies have come out of the shadows to some extent to take advantage of the various tax and financial benefits made possible by the new legislation, but also openly to defy the legitimacy of the Egyptian state. Quote, believing that this would help diffuse the Islamists' demands for the application of the Sharia and for the Islamization of the society. President Sadat and Mubarak themselves supported the emergence and the growth of an Islamic world of finance, unquote, since the end of the 1970s, adds Saeed. Again quoting, "This specific economic area gradually has been transformed into a forum for disputing the Egyptian economic and political order," unquote. Through legalistic economic and financial practices, the Muslim Brothers and their other Islamic partners in finance work to crack the two pillars of the legitimacy of the state, that is, the neutrality of its banking structure and the sovereignty of the decisions it takes in the control of the national economy. And again, think of the Bormann Organization in that context of what you're about to hear. Under Mustafa Mashour's guidance, the fraternity's economic apparatus pursues the same goal as the military apparatus, the obligatory reunification of the Muslim community. In this economic view, the believers will no longer be brought together by overtly political or insurrectionary means, but by means of the none too easily controlled financial transactions. Since religion is not to be separated from the economy, the various financial practices will have to conform with Islamic law in order to constitute an economically autonomous system of exchanges. Islamic finance, the extension of the holy war by other means. While they are particularly involved in this new theological financial strategy, the Muslim Brothers do not have a monopoly on it, and they benefit from the transnational financial tools of the Gulf countries working on a planet-wide scale. The quote, "Pan-Islamic propaganda of the great Saudi banks, like that of the International Association of Islamic Banks, chaired by Prince Mohammed Faisal, makes much of the necessity to unify the Muslim community through finance, and in this respect it is significant," unquote, explains Michel Galou, a researcher at the Center for Economic, Legal, and Social Studies and Documentation of Cairo. And we're going to skip down now to a discussion of Ahmed Huber, another member of Al-Taqwa's Board of Management, or of NADA Management. We've looked at Huber in the past, and we're going to discuss not only some of his fascist connections, and by the way, one of the things not mentioned here is his association with the NPD, the arguably the top German so-called neo-Nazi party, and the German ally of the National Alliance, the arguably the most important American so-called neo-Nazi organization, and the parent organization of National Vanguard Books that publishes Serpent's Walk. Turning once again to Dollars for Terror of Ahmed Huber, referred to here as A.H., and a member of the board of directors of Al-Taqwa, referred to as A.T. Bear in mind this book was published in 1999, well before 2001, and before the U.S. government put Al-Taqwa on its list of terrorist supporting organizations. Of Ahmed Huber, we read, "Another member of the Al-Taqwa Board of Directors links the history of that bank to that of the complex bonds woven between Islamism and the swastika." And, skipping down again, "Twice in 1963 and 1965 in the Egyptian capital, he met Johann von Leers, the former right-hand man of Dr. Goebbels, who, quote, opened his eyes to the real meaning of the great adventure of the Third Reich," unquote. Now proclaiming a moderated revisionism, unquote, he acknowledges that there was indeed genocide, but refuses to accept the, quote, distorted interpretation, unquote, given by the Americans, the Russians, and the Israelis, unquote. In tandem with his growing fascination for the architects of the New Order, unquote, he took up various Arab causes, one after another. The walls of his office, like some kind of Alibaba cave of revisionism, are covered with portraits that symbolize this convergence of the revival between Islam and the Christian West, unquote. The place of honor is given to Chancellor Hitler, the man who upset the world the most and made his mark on universal history, unquote. A second photograph, in which Hitler is talking with Himmler, hangs next to those of Necmettin Erbakan and Jean-Marie Le Pen. By the way, Jean-Marie Le Pen is the French fascist and the director of the Front National, about which we've spoken many times in the past. Continuing, Erbakan, head of the Turkish Islamist Party, Refah, turned to Ahmed for an introduction to the chief of the French party of the far right. Exiting from the meeting, which took place in September of 1995, Huber's two friends supposedly stated that they, quote, share the same view of the world, unquote, and expressed their common desire to work together to remove the last racist obstacles that still prevent the union of the Islamist movement with the national right of Europe, unquote. What we're going to do now is to skip ahead. In addition to Jean-Marie Le Pen and Huber's other fascist and Nazi connections, we're going to take a look now at Huber's connections with some of the occult fascist elements currently operating in Europe and descended from some of their antecedents with the Third Reich, and we're going to look at some other familiar names. Of Huber, La Bavière writes, a member of the group Avalon, which claims to be based on the great Celtic tradition, at every solstice, Huber meets under the moon amidst great trees with a few hundred European druids with whom he is preparing the, quote, end of our decline, unquote. With the group Tula, a secret society particularly popular in the German administration and the political class, he works for the restoration of Greater Germany, unquote. The Tula group's ties with Islam go back many years, in particular through the theories of Haushofer, Horbiger, and René Guénon. In the wake of Annenerbe, by that was the SS Ancestral Research Bureau and Occult Specialty Society, in the wake of the Annenerbe, the Nazi Society for Esoteric Studies, bonds were woven between Islam and the neo-Nazi far right. With the French hard right club De Loge, the bank shareholder strives to make contact with all true European and American nationalists, unquote. Recently, he went to Chicago for a discreet congress that brought together the, quote, authentic right and the fighters for Islam, unquote. And he says that, again quoting, major decisions were taken. The reunification is underway, unquote. And we're going to pause from our discussion of Dollars for Terror, and we're going to turn to another book that we've used many times in the past. This is an essential text for anyone studying contemporary politics and fascism. I'm referring, as many listeners may guess, to the encyclopedic Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey in the Postwar Fascist International, authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan and published in softcover by Autano Media and copyright 1999. The ISBN number is 1-57027-039-2, and I would note that the text is edited by WFMU On Air personality Dave Mandel. Of the connections between Karl Haushofer, the developer of the geopolitics that affected Adolf Hitler, and of his association with Rudolf Hess, Hitler's deputy, and the far-right Tula Society, we read in Dreamer of the Day, talking about the association between Hitler and Karl Haushofer. They first met in Munich in the early 1920s through Haushofer's protege Rudolf Hess, who was a member of Munich's influential far-right Tula Society. After the collapse of the beer hall putsch, Hess briefly hid from the authorities in Haushofer's summer home in the Bavarian Alps. While visiting Hess in Landsberg prison, Haushofer again met Hitler. And I would note that in For the Record program number 211, among other broadcasts, we noted some of the connections between fascism and elements of the occult and the counterculture, including the black metal milieu, also elements of the conspiracy community. And one of the elements of overlap is an organization called the Black Order that was founded by New Zealand occultist and fascist Kerry Bolton. And Kerry Bolton, by the way, publishes some of the books of Francis Parker Yockey, the focal point of Kevin Coogan's book. Kerry Bolton founded an organization called the Black Order, and it in turn looks to not only a Nazism, but the Tula Society. Turning to Dreamer of the Day, the Black Order's self-proclaimed purpose is, quote, to study the esoteric current behind National Socialism, Tula, and the occult tradition from which they are derived, to prepare a political and cultural infrastructure to replace the collapsing of the old order, and to preserve the dark forces on earth via ritual magic, study, propaganda, infiltration, and any other means deemed necessary. Unquote. We're going to return to Dreamer of the Day in a second, but let's return to Dollars for Terror, and we're going to look at another familiar name that is associated with Ahmed Huber. During his many tribulations, Ahmed Huber became acquainted with the neo-Nazi banker François Genoux, whose path in life presents a singular summary of the interconnections, the specific alliances that have been tied and untied between Islam and the swastika. Still referring to the neo-Nazi banker, Ahmed Huber told Payal Payen, quote, "I never asked him any questions, but I noted that in circles as different as the German right, the Islamic movements of Asia, the Palestinians, and in the Maghreb, people speak of him with great respect. Everyone told me, he helped us. I have the impression that he played an important, though discreet, role. It was I who introduced him to the Iranians." François Genoux. And I'm going to review an element that we've looked at in, for the record, by the way, we looked at Genoux in a big way in the miscellaneous archive shows M19 and M21. We have also looked at Genoux in a big way in For the Record program 333. We came back to Genoux in For the Record program number 341, and we're going to look at him again. And turning once again to Dreamer of the Day, of François Genoux, Kevin Coogan writes in Appendix E, Sheikh François, Friend to Hitler and Carlos the Jackal, "On May 30th, 1996, an obscure Swiss banker named François Genoux committed suicide in Geneva, Switzerland. From the brief mention of his death in the New York Times, one would not know that one of the most important figures in the history of 20th century terrorism had died. And how many men can say that they were friends with both Adolf Hitler and Carlos the Jackal?" Skipping ahead once again, "Genoux, too, was in the thick of things, having established a friendship with SS General Karl Wolff, leader of the German team in Italy that negotiated Operation Sunrise with Dulles. Shortly after the war, Genoux acquired the publishing rights to the works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Josef Goebbels. He also played a major, if murky, role in aiding fugitive Nazi war criminals. Another key player in the post-war Nazi underground resident in Switzerland was SD Colonel Eugen Dolman, Wolff's chief lieutenant in the talks with Dulles. Besides Wolff, Dolman and Genoux had another friend in common, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Genoux first met the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem in 1936 and again in Berlin during the war." And skipping down, "In 1955, with the Grand Mufti's friend Johann von Leers helping to run Egypt's propaganda ministry and its all-important Institute for the Study of Zionism, Genoux began to see Egypt as a base for the anti-French FLN independence movement in Algeria. And of Genoux's role in helping to generate support for Carlos the Jackal after his arrest in Sudan in 1994, note that Zacharias Moussaoui, an alleged member of Al-Taqwa who has been indicted, has as his attorney the future wife of Carlos the Jackal, who represented Carlos after his arrest in Sudan in 1994. Genoux became directly involved in helping Carlos after the Jackal was arrested in the Sudan by French agents on August 15, 1994. For some years after Wadi Haddad's death, Carlos operated out of bases in Hungary and other Eastern European countries. He also spent time in Damascus. After his arrest, Genoux publicly expressed his great admiration for Carlos, whom Genoux considered one of the heroes of the Palestinian cause." Yet another friend of Ahmed Huber. In For the Record programs 330 and number 337, we took a look at the fact that Prince Turki, the now deposed head of Saudi intelligence, was, contrary to official accounts, running Osama bin Laden. I would note that Prince Turki was deposed as the chief of Saudi intelligence the week before the September 11th attacks. Returning to Dollars for Terror, we're going to take a look at a discussion that alleges that Prince Turki and associated elements of U.S. intelligence were in fact running Osama bin Laden all along. Contrary to its recurring denials, the bin Laden family never cut its ties with Osama, the prodigal son. In spite of his loss of Saudi nationality, which was announced in response to international requirements, Osama always relied on the family group to conclude the training and the many relocations of his Afghan mercenaries. These successive redeployments were always carried out at the instigation of Turkey and in connection with his CIA contacts. Among his many activities, the chief of the Saudi Secret Service, endowed with a power that cuts across many fields, politically supervises the allocation of state contracts and always gives preference to the bin Laden group and assures it the best terms of payment. This meticulous care partly explains the financial power of Osama bin Laden, the banker of the jihad, unquote. And skipping down yet again, still today, Prince Turki, the constrained friend of the CIA and his Secret Service, make abundant use of Osama bin Laden's networks, whereas the Federal Court of New York has issued an international warrant for his arrest. Taking into account the close ties between the United States and Saudi Arabia, it is inconceivable that bin Laden remains beyond reach. Bin Laden's networks, with all their many branches, also enjoy the active support of the Muslim Brothers. The powerful religious fraternity never refused to put its military and financial logistics at the disposal of the Saudi billionaire. And jumping back to the present, the New York Times of January 10th of 2002, that a Thursday has the following Reuters story, dateline Zurich, January 9th. Swiss firm closes amid inquiry. A Swiss company that is under investigation for possible financial transactions for people suspected in the September 11th attacks said today that it was shutting down because negative publicity had caused business to dry up. Youssef Nada, the founder and senior executive of Nada Management Organization based in Lugano, Switzerland, said that the company had already gone into liquidation. "What do you expect after all that?" Mr. Nada said, as quoted by the New York Times. And jumping back to Dollars for Terror of Youssef Nada and all that, unquote. But Youssef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian secret services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the Fraternity of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. And skipping ahead, "Why Munich? Why Germany?" I asked Rifat Saeed. "Because there one finds old complicities that go back to the late 1930s when the Muslim Brothers collaborated with the agents of Nazi Germany," unquote. Past broadcasts are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. You can visit their website at spitfirelist.com. And all of the For the Record programs are archived by WFMU at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 343, Mein Jihad, Part 2, Old Complicities That Go Back to the Late 1930s. This is being recorded on January 13th of 2002. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.